Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Jacob George, who has served three tours in Afghanistan with the United States Army and recently took part in demonstrations against NATO in Chicago, where he and other veterans returned medals that they had been awarded for service in Iraq and Afghanistan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jacob George.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And on this Memorial Day, Jacob, you as a veteran, I know you've gone back to Afghanistan after serving there for three tours, coming in initially right after the 9/11 and with the first intervention. In terms of reflections, I see a lot of jingoism. I see a lot of I don't see any real deep questioning going on in the media about whether these, particularly these two recent wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, were worth the sacrifice, the loss of blood and treasure.
Well, there was a mother at the demonstration in Chicago that I think summed it up best. Her son had committed suicide, and she spoke with us. And basically she said, we need to heal the wounded, honor the dead, and stop the war. Her son had committed suicide largely because of the lack of mental health treatment that he had sought out, attempted suicide multiple times, and still couldn't get the help that he needed. And I think if there's one thing we as a nation need to reflect on this Memorial Day, it's how are we treating our veterans when they come home? Almost 18 veterans commit suicide a day. There's a mental health crisis in the U.S. military right now in terms of vets getting treatment, service members getting treatment for mental health and other issues. And if we really want to triumph our national heroes, so to speak, I think taking care of them is the single best thing we can do.
Well, it's a little cynical, isn't it, that all of the we're very quick to go to war and very slow to take care of people once they've been to war. It's almost I recall when some of the soldiers in Afghanistan were complaining to Donald Rumsfeld about the IEDs that were blowing up and their vehicles and how lightly armored they were or not armored at all. And he sort of said, well, you go to war with the army you have. There seems to be a kind of a blasé attitude amongst the authorities about using the boys and girls, but, it's kind of throwing them away after they've used them.
Yeah, and it's there's a lot of speculation around why. If every single vet and family member who deserves benefits was to receive them at this point in time and in the future, it would cost more than the wars themselves. So advocates for this type of thing know that it's unlikely that we're ever going to see what we truly deserve, but it is important to continue to struggle for as much as we can get.
But Jacob George, Halliburton got their money. The contractors have already gotten their money. That's the part of it that burns me, that the money that was spent on that war, they've already cashed in. The money that's owed to you and the other vets, you got to fight for it.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate, and that is the reality. That's the truth of the whole thing. I think it just speaks volumes to why we're there in the first place. The fact that that's happening, what you just said. And I wish it was different. I wish there was things that we could change, but it's kind of grim.
Again, I'm speaking with Jacob George, who served three tours in Afghanistan with the United States Army. He recently took part in demonstrations against NATO in Chicago, where he and other veterans returned medals that they had been awarded for service in Iraq and Afghanistan. What's your sense of, in terms of fellow veterans, about the future of the U.S. military? There's a growing trend, obviously, in the use of drones that suggests a sort of war made easy, made painless and bloodless, and unless you're on the receiving end of a missile, going into smaller sort of special forces units, more special forces, more black ops, Petraeus at the CIA leading that kind of transition, if you will. Do you see a future in which the use of military force will be actually easier than it's been in the past, or will the politicians step up and ask some more questions?
I think that's a really good question, and that is something we need to look at very closely. The special operations community has grown exponentially since September 11th, 2001. For example, the United States Air Force at this point in time doesn't have a single aircraft that is coming to light that has a manned pilot. Almost every single, or actually every single aircraft in development for the U.S. Air Force is remote controlled. And the ground forces are slowly transitioning to special operations forces. From the reports that I've read and some of the transformations that I saw while I was in, it's very likely that the military as we understand it right now is on its way out. And that the military of the future is mostly going to be a special operations force. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the main reasons is exactly what we were talking about earlier, the cost of having a huge military once the war is over. You know, if they could just have a handful of special operations operators that are training people in the countries that we want to go into to do the dirty work, instead of having soldiers do that and then having to pay for us for the rest of our lives, that's actually a better investment for the Department of Defense.
But what about the military-industrial complex? They like to build extremely complicated and expensive weapon systems like the F-22 Raptor. And I don't know whether, Jacob, you saw the 60 Minutes piece recently where the two pilots went public risking their careers as whistleblowers to point out that this aircraft that costs about $500 million a copy, the oxygen supply is not working, and the pilots are blacking out and losing aircraft and losing their lives, and they can't do sufficient training on them. And it's a Cold War weapon of dubious utility. In this transition to special forces, how are the military-industrial complex going to make the kind of money they expect to make?
Well, I think ridiculous projects like that are exactly how they're going to continue to make a lot of money. Special operations community uses very sophisticated weaponry and equipment, and there's a lot of money to be made there, as well as arming the forces that the special operations community is training. And I think with the heightened development of unmanned aircraft, which is the future of the Air Force, there's going to be plenty of opportunity for investment and dubious technology, as you put it.
Going back, you mentioned you came into Afghanistan in the first month after the U.S. Went in there in 2001 following the September 11th attacks. A lot of people have said, including, by the way, candidate Barack Obama and now President Obama, he basically made the argument in the election that George Bush took his eye off the ball and never finished the job in Afghanistan, and went into this disastrous war in Iraq instead, and that's why we've been in trouble ever since. As a veteran, what's your interpretation of what happened and what went wrong?
Well, as much as I don't want to place blame on anyone for this in particular, I will have to say that the Taliban was effectively toppled within 6 months of us being in that country and removed from power. And one of the things I've always questioned about this, and again, you know, I don't have enough of the bigger picture to know this, but why did we stay there longer than that? Unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever really know the answer to that question, but we could have left shortly after that. And still accomplished just almost everything we wanted to accomplish, for the most part. One of the reasons I say that is because it was in the beginning a CIA-led operation. There were CIA operatives on the ground working with special operations forces, which is one of the first times this has happened in a long time. And what that means is there was a very light military footprint, which means we could have easily gotten out of there just as easily as we got in. But unfortunately now, 10 years later, it's not going to be as easy to leave, as you have pointed out.
So is that to say then that our heavy footprint, all the boots on the ground, a Christian army in Muslim lands, is that a part of the problem itself?
Well, I think the inability to be culturally sensitive to a lot of the Muslim cultures in Afghanistan is definitely a huge problem. And a military that does have a predominant Christian presence is something that can look slightly insulting when people are ignorantly, I don't think purposely, burning religious texts. And, you know, in Afghanistan, a lot of things travel by word of mouth. You know, people share stories, they talk to each other a lot. That's how a lot of news and information is shared. So when things like this happen, you know, they spread as rumors, and there's simply no way to rebuild our image when stuff like that happens, especially given that we are seen as a predominantly Christian military in a Muslim land.
So, Jacob George, what are you doing today on Memorial Day?
Well, I am, for the most part, reflecting on the past year of work, especially the action in Chicago. And I'm in transit. I'm going home to see my family for about a week before I continue training for social justice later this year.
So how do your family and friends feel about you throwing your medals towards the NATO meeting? You mentioned when I talked to you the day that you did it that you tried to hand your medals over to an official with NATO, but because of security, you couldn't even get near the place. So you and the other vets symbolically threw your medals towards where the NATO meeting was taking place in Chicago, somewhat reminiscent of the Vietnam War days.
Well, my friends are very, very encouraging. My friends really like this work and encourage me to do it. My family, on the other hand, I haven't told them that I did that yet. And when I get home, I'm kind of going to probe the situation and see how they feel about it before I really break the news to them, because they're not in total support of things like that. And just hanging out with them and having a good time is more important to me than trying to talk politics.
Well, I guess, you know, that goes back to my original question to you, Jacob George, isn't that the strangest thing that at least what I find about Memorial Day is that it is devoid of politics. It's just that we unconditionally support the troops and what they did, and you'd think that actually, it might be a better occasion to think about why we did these things and whether or not they serve the national interest and you know, what maybe we should figure out something else to do and a different way to deal with national security issues.
In an ideal world, that would be amazing. I wish I could open this dialogue up with my parents and we could sit down at the table and have a serious critical analysis of U.S. foreign policy and the past 10 years of war. But unfortunately, that isn't available. That's not something I can do. And maybe over time, I've seen them change a lot over the past 2 years. And maybe as this thing unrolls in the future, we'll get closer to that dialogue. But as for now, as you say, it is a blind day for barbecuing.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today on Memorial Day, Jacob George.
Well, thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Jacob George, who served three tours in Afghanistan with the United States Army and recently took part in demonstrations against NATO in Chicago, where he and other veterans returned medals that they had been awarded for service in Iraq and Afghanistan. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.